How you doing? It's Jaquetta Williams. We have a topic that I know you're going to want to hear. All of our topics are good, but I promise you, you're going to have a question, probably numerous questions. We're talking about cervical cancer. This is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. Before I jump into the show, though, I want to say happy anniversary to the ladies of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority and happy birthday to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, let's talk about cervical cancer. First, you're going to meet a woman who is a doctor. Dr. Lisa Flowers, she's a cervical cancer specialist. She has the Spirit Foundation. She's an associate professor with Emory University School of Medicine, and she's also the founder of the Spirit Foundation. Then you're going to meet Jennifer Culbertson. She is a cervical cancer survivor. I know you're out there cheering and clapping and all that good stuff because that's what we do when we talk about surviving cancer. And then you're going to meet another young lady. Her name is Sand Davis. Sand is a caregiver. Her mother, unfortunately, passed away of cervical cancer in November 2012. She was diagnosed September 2011. So thank you, ladies, so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We're very really glad to be here.
Okay, so doctor, let's start with you. First of all, tell us, what is HPV?
HPV is a circular DNA that is actually very, very common in the population, in males and females who are sexually active. When you look at rates, approximately by the age of 50 years of age, 80% of women would have had contact with the HPV vaccine. And that's how common. So when I actually talk to patients about it, I try to explain to them that this is a virus. It is as common as the common cold. You are sexually active. It is not a surprise that you have had some contact with this virus. So I make sure that they don't feel bad about it, but that we actually monitor them to make sure that the virus doesn't cause changes in their cervix that put them at risk for cancer.
Because the bottom line, too, if you are sexually active and you do have HPV, then the HPV can ultimately turn into cervical cancer if it's not treated or watched like it should, correct?
Well, sort of. So what happens is the virus infects the cells that are on the cervix, which is the doorway to the womb or the uterus. And what happens is really is the virus infects the body. The body may or may not be able to manage the infection. And if the virus persists, then it can actually result in changes in the cervix. And those cells can become abnormal. And then over years and years and years, if the cells are not detected with the Pap test, then the woman can progress towards cancer. But otherwise, we have only a small percentage of women infected with HPV that turn into that develop cancer. The majority of women with HPV will never have cancer and may never have changes on their cervix. So I want to make sure that that's clear.
This is also why getting those Pap smears are so important. But you were telling me before the show started that you don't necessarily have to get them every year now?
Absolutely. So we made changes to those recommendations because we found out we were being too aggressive in our young female population. So now we actually start Pap smear testing at 21 years of age, and we actually do the Paps as long as they're normal in the healthy female population every 3 years until age 65. Now, once a woman gets to age 30, we can add on the high-risk HPV testing, meaning the HPV testing types for that cause cancer. Mm-hmm. And that, along with the Pap, is a better screening test every 5 years to make sure a woman doesn't develop cervical cancer.
One of the other things you were telling me, too, is that this is just not something towards women. Men are susceptible to HPV as well.
Oh, absolutely. And so there's particular populations of men that are even at a higher risk for HPV infection. And that would be men who have sex with men, men who are HIV positive, and they're at risk to getting anal cancer. Mm. Now, for heterosexual men, the changes in them can occur, but they're much more rare, like penile cancer. Men can also get genital warts, just like females can get genital warts, from the HPV types that do not cause cancer but cause genital warts. So HPV can present itself in multiple forms, and naturally, we're always concerned about the forms or the types that can cause cancer.
Let me ask you one more question, and then I'm going to bring my other two guests in. Now, you mentioned genital warts when it comes to HPV. How do you know, or is there a difference between genital warts, HPV, and genital warts, herpes?
Oh, absolutely. So herpes is a different type of sexually transmitted infection. Mm-hmm. It is a virus,
right.
Herpes simplex virus, but it doesn't cause any genital warts, and it doesn't cause cancer. Herpes doesn't cause cancer, doesn't cause genital warts, but you can't get rid of it once you're infected. So that's kind of similar to HPV.
Okay.
Once you get human papillomavirus, you can't really eliminate it from the body. It may go dormant mm-hmm. and go asleep, and we can't detect it anymore. And that happens sometimes where women said, well, now I'm not HPV positive. You did the test with the pap test. I'm no longer detectable for HPV. Is it completely gone from the body? And we really can't say that. We just can say that we can't detect it anymore. And it seems like your body is managing it.
Okay. So, Jennifer, let me bring you into the conversation now because you are a cervical cancer survivor. Can you walk us through how you were even able to find out that, A, you had HPV and then it graduated to cervical cancer?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. It was about 10 years ago, and I began to feel just extremely fatigued, and I didn't have any other symptoms, as we talked before, other than my lower back. A number of cervical cancer patients will have different discharge or other symptoms, and I didn't have any of those. And I was actually traveling in business, so I wasn't sexually active, and I wasn't able to see my own primary care physician here in Atlanta mm-hmm. while I was traveling. So I actually went to, and forgive the term, doc in a box to go have
okay.
my pap test.
Okay.
And I was told, you know, I had to my pap test was actually normal. There was nothing wrong, so I didn't need to come back for 5 years. But unfortunately, when I came back to Atlanta, I began to feel more and more fatigued. So I went to the doctor, and since we weren't looking for this, it was diagnosed as back pain from a car accident and so on and so on. And it wasn't until I got with Dr. Flowers that we realized at that time I had a tumor that was 8 centimeters by 8 centimeters.
And what was your next? I know you had to be scared out of your mind.
Absolutely. You know, when somebody tells you that you have cancer, that of all things, cervical cancer, you're faced with, you immediately think death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate to have Dr. Flowers who walked me through this, and it is not a death sentence.
What stage was your cervical cancer?
2B.
Okay. And so what was your course of attacking the disease and getting rid of it?
First had radiation. And I had that for about 26 weeks every day. And then we went into chemotherapy with cisplatin, and I had that once a week.
Doctor, let me bring you back really quickly mm-hmm. because Jennifer mentions that she had fatigue. So I'm assuming you did not have any of the other symptoms that women normally have, which is the bleeding.
Correct.
After possibly after intercourse mm-hmm. or anything else. So what was this an unusual case, or is this something that you've seen before?
No, I mean, most of the symptoms are that if you have symptoms, is bleeding after sex or vaginal bleeding. But to be honest with you, the majority of women with cervical cancer will present with no symptoms.
Wow.
And so that's kind of important. And that's why it's so, so critical to make sure that women have a pap test as recommended by their doctor every 3 years to age 65, or with the HPV test after 30 every 5 years.
So that pap test is really a lifesaver. It can really make a difference between certain things if you don't get checked like you should, correct?
Absolutely. And I think Jennifer made a really good point. Women who get cervical cancer here in the United States are women who have a long span between the time they were screened and or have inconsistent screening and are unable to access care because they don't have that regular screening. And sometimes that one screening that you do have, the pap test may not be as accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the pap test only becomes a good tool with regular routine screening and with frequency that's appropriate based on the age.
Jennifer, what's your new normal like? Do you have to get testing a lot more regularly, or now that it's gone, is it gone and what?
No, actually, I do get tested every 6 months because you still have abnormal cells, and mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I keep an eye on it. Once you have it, like we discussed before, you cannot go back and get the HPV vaccination. I have it, I have to manage it, and I have to keep an eye on it. So if I could say the message, even if uncomfortable as a pap test is, please make sure you get your pap test and ask for an HPV test as well.
I know you all have a number of questions we want to hear from you. 404-880-9255. That is the number that you can call. Again, 404-880-9255. Or you can tweet your questions to @CCRTD or @JaquettaW. Again, @CCRTD or @JaquettaW. Let me bring my friend Sand in, whose mom unfortunately passed away from. And I know how difficult it can be being a caregiver. Not only Sand is an only child, and she had to take care of her mother as well as her grandmother, and she has two children. So you had a lot going on in addition to being a caregiver for your mom. Talk about how difficult that was.
Well, it was a lot. My mother was healthy up until that point where she went to the doctor. When we talked earlier, you know, I was telling you that she had no symptoms except she just started hemorrhaging a little bit.
And how old was your mother?
She was 53 when she was diagnosed.
Okay.
And just everything was, it was crazy. I had to end up moving her into my home because she wasn't able to take care of herself because, you know, she was getting chemo and radiation at the same time. And she was like our matriarch. You know, she took care of everybody. So when that happened, it just, our whole world just like turned upside down.
And you mentioned to me that your mother had, she was experiencing some spotting.
Right.
Which she technically shouldn't have had since she was past the age of having a period.
Right. She hadn't had a cycle, I think, in about 10 years. Mm-hmm. She had went through, I guess, early, what's that, menopause, mm-hmm. maybe, mm-hmm. and had no issues. She wasn't sexually active. You know, my father had passed away quite some years before. Mm-hmm. So just all of a sudden, she was going to get her pap test, but she would go like every 3 or 4 years. And just one time she didn't go because she was busy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got past her, you know. And when she did go, because she started having issues, she went in September 2011 and then, she went August 2011. They sent off a test, and then September, you know, it comes back, you have cancer.
And what stage was your mom's cancer?
Well, we found out October, it was 3B.
Doctor, with 3B, that means what in, as far as stages of cancers are concerned?
That's pretty advanced stage. That means it's gone out to the pelvic sidewall, you know, so it fills up the pelvis, the woman's. And when you look at survival rates, you're looking at 30 to 40% survival rates at somebody with that stage disease or less. And so that's the problem, that 5-year survival with that stage disease is so poor. That's why it's so critical. If you notice this repetitive comments that she missed a pap here, mm-hmm. the pap was extended here. These are the things that unfortunately can put our female population and young women or in older women who still carry so much of the burden of the family at risk for cancer. So that's the problem. And unfortunately, cervical cancer is, if you notice, it takes a long time. She mentioned that, well, you know, her father had died. She hadn't had sexual intercourse. It's because the HPV infection occurred early in the life of the female a patient. And it's just that long incubation period with the HPV infection persisting that actually put females at risk, especially when screening is not done.
Okay, Dr. Flowers, let me take a little break here. We're going to go in and go to our phone line because we've got some people on the line who want to ask some of you questions. So we're going to go to line 6. I have Joe on the line. Hi, Joe. What's your question?
Hi. I had a partial hysterectomy about 10 years ago. I'm 57. I haven't had a pap. And it was my understanding that I need to have one now that I don't have my, I still have my ovaries. And I want to know, how does that play into the possibility of getting cervical cancer?
That's an excellent question. So basically, they took your uterus out, they took your cervix out, but they left your ovaries. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so women who have had we call that actually a complete hysterectomy. It's just that they didn't take your ovaries out. When a woman has had a complete hysterectomy and there's no cervix, there's no need for further screening because vaginal cancer is very rare, unless they either have cervical cancer like Jennifer has, and so she needs extended screening for 20 years, or if they were treated because they had bad cells on their cervix, and then they need to be followed after their cervix and their uterus is removed. However, if you had your uterus removed because of fibroids, was that the reason? Yes. And so you never had any abnormal paps?
No.
So in her case, she does not need any screening because her cervix is removed, which is the area that's most at risk for HPV disease. And she has a very, very rare chance of getting vaginal cancer. So we don't screen.
One of the things that we talked about, thank you so much for your question, Joe.
Excellent.
We appreciate it. One of the things that we also talked about, too, which we need to make very clear, you know, you see a lot of the commercials talking about if you have a daughter and then she's 13 or she's 8, to make certain that she's vaccinated. But let's just say if you're 35, 40, then you cannot get vaccinated for it because you've already reached the point of where you may have it. You can't go back and get rid of it once you already have it. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the vaccination, that we have two vaccines, a quadrivalent, which has four HPV types, and a bivalent, which has two HPV types. And the ages that they are recommended is between 9 to 26 years of age. But like you said, we know that young girls start initiating sexual intercourse much earlier than that. And so it's a problem that once they're infected with the HPV types that are in the vaccine, they cannot receive protection from it. So it has to, that's why we really encourage our pediatricians to talk to families, to encourage them to, so the young girls get the vaccines before they are sexually active, so they have the best protection.
And the vaccine came about in what, 2006? Is that what we
Correct.
Talked about?
Okay. That's when the quadrivalent got approved.
Okay. So basically, if you're anywhere in my age and on,
yes.
They didn't have it around when we were. Okay. We tots. Okay, let's go to line four. What's your question? Okay, we'll go to
Hello?
Line. Oh, are you
Hello?
There? Hi.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. What's your name?
I'm sorry. I'm pregnant and me and baby are snacking.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. Okay, what's your name and what's your question?
My name is Ebony. My question is two-part. One, I wanted, and you may have touched on this and I didn't hear it, but I wanted to know what is, I've been told that they don't really test for HPV until you're 30 and older.
That's
and
correct.
Okay, and I was curious to know what was the reasoning behind it, because I never really was given an explanation that made
And he said, that is an excellent question. So I mentioned to you before that HPV is very common. It's as common as the common cold. So the presence of HPV in young women, especially women 21 to 24, is the highest in the population.
Mm. Okay.
If we started testing for HPV in the early 20s, we're going to find it. Women are going to be positive. Does that really mean that the woman is going to have, or the young girl is going to have abnormal changes on her cervix? No. So HPV infection does not equal cervical cancer at that age. HPV infection between 21 to 24 doesn't necessarily equate, you know, equal to bad cells on the cervix. It takes a long time to develop those bad changes on the cervix that could be at risk for cancer. So we try not to test young women less than 30 years of age because we know we're going to find HPV. But when a woman becomes 30, the HPV infection goes down because they stabilize things in their life. They usually have one partner. They're not as sexually active. The virus goes more dormant. We can't detect it. They're not getting infected with other types. So then that's when HPV testing becomes powerful to pick out the women that are at most risk for developing cancer in the future.
Hmm. Okay, what was the second part of your question? Are you there? Okay, we lost Ebony. Hopefully she'll call back and ask the second part. Let me ask you this, doctor, though. I just lost my train of thought. That never really happens to me. Okay, so let me ask this, though. This is the question. Because cervical cancer is such a specific type, is that something that's hereditary, or is it based on intercourse or something else?
That's an excellent question. And a lot of people worry it must be hereditary. No, it's actually transmitted through sexual intercourse.
Okay.
And that sexual intercourse doesn't have to be penis into the vagina. It could be touching. It could be just through touching of the skin. So, for instance, some women, young girls will say, well, I've never had sex, but they've had skin-to-skin contact with a male partner. So you'll be very surprised that HPV can get transmitted just through a break in the skin and having skin-to-skin contact.
What about our boys? Can they be tested? Can we give them something for HPV? That way, if it's coming from them, well, or from somebody, which may not be the woman, can they be tested or given something, some kind of vaccination?
Absolutely. So actually, boys and girls.
Or men.
Right. Boys and girls can be vaccinated now between 9 to 26 years of age.
Okay.
And we are encouraging boys to get vaccinated so that we can really bring down the rates of HPV infection in this country down.
Is it the same case if a man is already older and if he may present, there's no need for him to get the test as well?
Right. So we don't really test for HPV in men. It's too challenging.
Okay.
It's not as accurate as it is in women. But what we make an assumption is if they're sexually active, they're getting the virus as well.
Okay.
So that's why the vaccine is recommended between 9 to 26 years of age for both. Again, stressing, it's best to give it to boys and girls before sexual activity.
Okay. Line one, are you there, Marvin?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you? What's your question?
My question is, first of all, I have a 10-year-old, and from what I've heard from a girlfriend of mine, well, former girlfriend, that had the HPV virus and ended up contracting cervical cancer, the doctor told her that he wasn't going to give her the vaccine because the vaccine only dealt with 3 out of 300 viruses that would cause HPV. I mean, he said those numbers were not encouraging. And so therefore, also this doctor, he was an AMA certified doctor, but he didn't stay inside of that box. He dealt with whatever worked. And she is now cervical cancer free, looking better than ever.
So what's your question, Marvin?
Well, my question is, okay, you said that the vaccine came out in 07?
06.
06, okay. And I remember when it first came out, they were saying the girls needed to take it. Now they're saying the girls and the boys. I would not recommend my son take that because of what I know about vaccines.
Well, I'm really glad you brought this question up, Marvin. This is an excellent question. Let me tell you why. It's because of the lack of understanding about the vaccine. So even among physicians, which is unfortunate, the information hasn't come across. So for both vaccines has been shown to be effective in preventing abnormal cells, abnormal changes in high-grade bad cells on the cervix, for females, and in the anus for males, when given prior to sexual activity or prior to exposure to those HPV types, by 96% effective, 96% effective and above. So these two vaccines are very effective in preventing cervical cancer based on the HPV types they cover and other types of HPV-related cancers. Now, let me explain to you the issue. 70% of cervical cancers are caused by HPV 16 and 18, which are contained in the virus, in the vaccine. So the vaccine contains 16 and 18, which cause 70% of cervical cancer. If it's given before sexual activity, that's what it can prevent. Mm. Your physician was saying, well, there's over 300 types, or maybe there was a misunderstanding. There are approximately 100 HPV types, 40 which infect the areas of the sexual organs of males and female, and 15 to 20 that cause cervical cancer. So it's not 300. And in the vaccines we have now, they're covering those that actually cause 70% of cancer. So it's very effective. It's very important for these young girls to get vaccinated because you can prevent 70% of cervical cancer and abnormal changes in the cervix with this one, you know, these two vaccines. So that information wasn't exactly right. Yes, the vaccines do not have all of the HPV types that can cause cancer, but they do have the two types that cause 70% of cancers. Now, one of the companies, which I don't like to talk about company names, has a vaccine that's called the nanovalent, which has 9 HPV types. That's going to increase the ability to cover more HPV types to prevent cervical cancer.
So the bottom line is, if you can get vaccinated, if you can get your child, boy and girl, vaccinated, it's going to help prevent a lot.
Exactly. Okay. A large proportion of disease.
Gotcha. We are going to take a real quick break, but before we do, want to let you know, we need to talk about the Spirit Foundation, which Dr. Flowers has. You need to know about that because that way you can hear about those free pap tests and some other things that they're doing, as well as a walk. Then we're going to get back to our friend Sand, as well as our cervical cancer survivor, Jennifer. And don't forget, if you have a question, 404-880-9255. We got a lot of people we want to get to. So when you give us a call, make sure you ask your question first, so we can get to everybody, okay? We're coming right back.